A lot? How much do you mean by a lot, exactly? Oh, no, I hung my head. He pulled me against his chest, softly, naturally. Don't be self-conscious, he whispered in my ear. If I could dream at all, it would be about you. And I'm not ashamed of it. Then we both heard the sounds of tires on the brick driveway, saw the headlights flash through the front windows, down the hall to us. I stiffened in his arms. Should your father know I'm here? He asked. I'm not sure. I tried to think it through quickly. Another time, then. And I was alone. Edward! I hissed. I heard a ghostly chuckle, then nothing else. My father's key turned in the door. Bella? He called. It had bothered me before. Who else would it be? Suddenly, he didn't seem so far off base. In here! I hoped he couldn't hear the hysterical edge to my voice. I grabbed my dinner from the microwave and sat at the table as he walked in. His footsteps sounded so noisy after my day with Edward. Can you get me some of that? I'm bushed. He stepped on the heels of his boots to take them off, holding the back of Edward's chair for support. I took my food with me, scarfing it down as I got his dinner. It burned my tongue. I filled two glasses with milk while his lasagna was heating, and gulped mine to put out the fire. As I set the glass down, I noticed the milk trembling and realized my hand was shaking. Charlie sat in the chair, and the contrast between him and its former occupant was comical. Thanks, he said as I placed his food on the table. How was your day? I asked. The words were rushed. I was dying to escape to my room. Good. The fish were biting. How about you? Did you get everything done that you wanted to? Not really. It was too nice out to stay indoors. I took another big bite. It was a nice day, he agreed. What an understatement, I thought to myself. Finished with the last bite of lasagna, I lifted my glass and chugged the remains of my milk. Charlie surprised me by being observant. In a hurry? Yeah, I'm tired. I'm going to bed early. You look kind of keyed up, he noted. Why, oh why, did this have to be his night to pay attention? Do I? Was all I could manage in response. I quickly scrubbed my dishes clean in the sink and placed them upside down on a dish towel to dry. It's Saturday, he mused. I didn't respond. No plans tonight? He asked suddenly. No, Dad. I just want to get some sleep. None of the boys in town your type, eh? He was suspicious, but trying to play it cool. No, none of the boys have caught my eye yet. I was careful not to overemphasize the word boys in my quest to be truthful with Charlie. I thought maybe that Mike Newton. You said he was friendly. He's just a friend, Dad. Well, you're too good for them all anyway. Wait till you get to college to start looking. Every father's dream, that his daughter will be out of the house before the hormones kick in. Sounds like a good idea to me, I agreed as I headed up the stairs. Night, honey, he called after me. No doubt he would be listening carefully all evening, waiting for me to try to sneak out. See you in the morning, Dad. See you creeping into my room tonight at midnight to check on me. I worked to make my tread sound slow and tired as I walked up the stairs to my room. I shut the door loud enough for him to hear, and then sprinted on my tiptoes to the window. I threw it open and leaned out into the night. My eyes scanned the darkness, the impenetrable shadows of the trees. Edward? I whispered, feeling completely idiotic. The quiet, laughing response came from behind me. Yes? I whirled, one hand flying to my throat in surprise. He lay, smiling hugely across my bed, his hands behind his head, his feet dangling off the end, the picture of ease. Oh, I breathed, sinking unsteadily to the floor. I'm sorry. He pressed his lips together, trying to hide his amusement. Just give me a minute to restart my heart. He sat up slowly so as not to startle me again. Then he leaned forward and reached out with his long arms to pick me up, gripping the tops of my arms like I was a toddler. He sat me on the bed beside him. Why don't you sit with me? He suggested, putting a cold hand on mine. How's the heart? You tell me. I'm sure you hear it better than I do. I felt his quiet laughter shake the bed. We sat there for a moment in silence, both listening to my heartbeat slow. I thought about having Edward in my room with my father in the house. Can I have a minute to be human? I asked. Certainly. He gestured with one hand that I should proceed. Stay, I said, trying to look severe. Yes, ma'am, and he made a show of becoming a statue on the edge of my bed. I hopped up, grabbing my pajamas from off the floor, my bag of toiletries off the desk. I left the light off and slipped out, closing the door. I could hear the sound from the TV rising up the stairs. I banged the bathroom door loudly so Charlie wouldn't come up to bother me. I meant to hurry. I brushed my teeth fiercely, trying to be thorough and speedy, removing all traces of lasagna. But the hot water of the shower couldn't be rushed. It unknotted the muscles in my back, calmed my pulse. The familiar smell of my shampoo made me feel like I might be the same person I had been this morning. I tried not to think of Edward sitting in my room waiting, because then I had to start all over with the calming process. Finally, I couldn't delay any more. I shut off the water, toweling hastily, rushing again. I pulled on my holy t-shirt and gray sweatpants. Too late to regret not packing the Victoria's Secret silk pajamas my mother got me 2 birthdays ago, which still had the tags on them in a drawer somewhere back home. I rubbed the towel through my hair again, and then yanked the brush through it quickly. I threw the towel in the hamper, flung my brush and toothpaste into my bag. Then I dashed down the stairs so Charlie could see that I was in my pajamas with wet hair. Night, Dad. Night, Bella. He did look startled by my appearance. Maybe that would keep him from checking on me tonight. I took the stairs 2 at a time, trying to be quiet, and flew into my room, closing the door tightly behind me. Edward hadn't moved a fraction of an inch, a carving of Adonis perched on my faded quilt. I smiled, and his lips twitched, the statue coming to life. His eyes appraised me, taking in the damp hair, the tattered shirt. He raised one eyebrow. Nice, I grimaced. No, it looks good on you. Thanks, I whispered. I went back to his side, sitting cross-legged beside him. I looked at the lines in the wooden floor. What was all that for? Charlie thinks I'm sneaking out. Oh, he contemplated that. Why? As if he couldn't know Charlie's mind much more clearly than I could guess. Apparently, I look a little overexcited. He lifted my chin, examining my face. You look very warm, actually. He bent his face slowly to mine, laying his cool cheek against my skin. I held perfectly still. He breathed. It was very difficult, while he was touching me, to frame a coherent question. It took me a minute of scattered concentration to begin. It seems to be much easier for you now to be close to me. Does it seem that way to you? He murmured, his nose gliding to the corner of my jaw. I felt his hand, lighter than a moth's wing, brushing my damp hair back, so that his lips could touch the hollow beneath my ear. Much, much easier, I said, trying to exhale. So I was wondering, I began again, but his fingers were slowly tracing my collarbone, and I lost my train of thought. Yes, he breathed. Why is that? My voice shook, embarrassing me. Do you think? I felt the tremor of his breath on my neck as he laughed. Mind over matter? I pulled back. As I moved, he froze, and I could no longer hear the sound of his breathing. We stared cautiously at each other for a moment, and then, as his clenched jaw gradually relaxed, his expression became puzzled. Did I do something wrong? No, the opposite. You're driving me crazy, I explained. He considered that briefly, and when he spoke, he sounded pleased. Really? A triumphant smile slowly lit his face. Would you like a round of applause? I asked sarcastically. He grinned. I'm just pleasantly surprised, he clarified. In the last 100 years or so? His voice was teasing. I never imagined anything like this. I didn't believe I would ever find someone I wanted to be with, in another way than my brothers and sisters. And then to find, even though it's all new to me, that I'm good at it, at being with you. You're good at everything, I pointed out. He shrugged, allowing that, and we both laughed in whispers. But how can it be so easy now, I pressed, this afternoon? It's not easy, he sighed. But this afternoon I was still undecided. I am sorry about that. It was unforgivable for me to behave so. Not unforgivable, I disagreed. Thank you, he smiled. You see, he continued, looking down now, I wasn't sure if I was strong enough. He picked up one of my hands and pressed it lightly to his face. And while there was still that possibility that I might be overcome, he breathed in the scent of my wrist, I was susceptible. Until I made up my mind that I was strong enough, that there was no possibility at all that I would, that I ever could. I'd never seen him struggle so hard for words. It was so human. So there's no possibility now? Mind over matter, he repeated, smiling, his teeth bright even in the darkness. Wow, that was easy, I said. He threw back his head and laughed, quietly as a whisper but still exuberantly. Easy for you, he amended, touching my nose with his fingertip. And then his face was abruptly serious. I'm trying, he whispered, his voice pained. If it gets to be too much, I'm fairly sure I'll be able to leave. I scowled. I didn't like the talk of leaving. And it will be harder tomorrow, he continued. I've had the scent of you in my head all day, and I've grown amazingly desensitized. If I'm away from you for any length of time, I'll have to start over again. Not quite from scratch, though, I think. Don't go away, then, I responded, unable to hide the longing in my voice. That suits me, he replied, his face relaxing into a gentle smile. Bring on the shackles. I'm your prisoner. But his long hands formed manacles around my wrists as he spoke. He laughed his quiet, musical laugh. He'd laughed more tonight than I'd ever heard in all the time I'd spent with him. You seem more optimistic than usual, I observed. I haven't seen you like this before. Isn't it supposed to be like this? He smiled. The glory of first love and all that. It's incredible, isn't it? The difference between reading about something, seeing it in the pictures, and experiencing it. Very different, I agreed. More forceful than I'd imagined. For example, his words flowed swiftly now. I had to concentrate to catch it all. The emotion of jealousy. I've read about it 100,000 times, seen actors portray it in 1,000 different plays and movies. I believed I understood that one pretty clearly. But it shocked me, he grimaced. Do you remember the day that Mike asked you to the dance? I nodded, though I remembered that day for a different reason. The day you started talking to me again. I was surprised by the flare of resentment, almost fury, that I felt. I didn't recognize what it was at first. I was even more aggravated than usual, that I couldn't know what you were thinking. Why you refused him. Was it simply for your friend's sake? Was there someone else? I knew I had no right to care either way. I tried not to care. And then the line started forming, he chuckled. I scowled in the darkness. I waited, unreasonably anxious to hear what you would say to them, to watch your expressions. I couldn't deny the relief I felt, watching the annoyance on your face, but I couldn't be sure. That was the first night I came here. I wrestled all night while watching you sleep, with the chasm between what I knew was right, moral, ethical, and what I wanted. I knew that if I continued to ignore you as I should, or if I left for a few years, till you were gone. But someday you would say yes to Mike, or someone like him. It made me angry. And then, he whispered, as you were sleeping, you said my name. You spoke so clearly. At first I thought you'd woken. But you rolled over restlessly and mumbled my name once more, and sighed. The feeling that coursed through me then was unnerving, staggering, and I knew I couldn't ignore you any longer. He was silent for a moment, probably listening to the suddenly uneven pounding of my heart. But jealousy, it's a strange thing, so much more powerful than I would have thought, and irrational. Just now, when Charlie asked you about that vile Mike Newton, he shook his head angrily. I should have known you'd be listening, I groaned. Of course. That made you feel jealous, though? Really? I'm new at this. You're resurrecting the human in me. And everything feels stronger because it's fresh. But honestly, I teased, for that to bother you, after I have to hear that Rosalie, the incarnation of pure beauty, Rosalie was meant for you. Emmett or no Emmett, how can I compete with that? There's no competition, his teeth gleamed. He drew my trapped hands around his back, holding me to his chest. I kept as still as I could, even breathing with caution. I know there's no competition, I mumbled into his cold skin. That's the problem. Of course Rosalie is beautiful in her way. But even if she wasn't like a sister to me, even if Emmett didn't belong with her, she could never have 1/10, no, 1/100 of the attraction you hold for me. He was serious now, thoughtful. For almost 90 years, I've walked among my kind, and yours, all the time thinking I was complete in myself, not realizing what I was seeking, and not finding anything, because you weren't alive yet. It hardly seems fair, I whispered, my face still resting on his chest, listening to his breath come and go. I haven't had to wait at all. Why should I get off so easily? You're right, he agreed with amusement. I should make this harder for you, definitely. He freed one of his hands, released my wrist, only to gather it carefully into his other hand. He stroked my wet hair softly from the top of my head to my waist. You only have to risk your life every second you spend with me. That's surely not much. You only have to turn your back on nature, on humanity. What's that worth? Very little. I don't feel deprived of anything. Not yet. And his voice was abruptly full of ancient grief. I tried to pull back to look in his face, but his hand locked my wrists in an unbreakable hold. What? I started to ask when his body became alert. I froze, but he suddenly released my hands and disappeared. I narrowly avoided falling on my face. Lie down, he hissed. I couldn't tell where he spoke from in the darkness. I rolled under my quilt, balling up on my side the way I usually slept. I heard the door crack open, as Charlie peeked in to make sure I was where I was supposed to be. I breathed evenly, exaggerating the movement. A long minute passed. I listened, not sure if I'd heard the door close. Then Edward's cool arm was around me, under the covers, his lips at my ear. You are a terrible actress. I'd say that career path is out for you. Darn it, I muttered. My heart was crashing in my chest. He hummed a melody I didn't recognize. It sounded like a lullaby. He paused. Should I sing you to sleep? Right, I laughed, like I could sleep with you here. You do it all the time, he reminded me. But I didn't know you were here, I replied icily. So if you don't want to sleep, he suggested, ignoring my tone. My breath caught. If I don't want to sleep? He chuckled. What do you want to do, then? I couldn't answer at first. I'm not sure, I finally said. Tell me when you decide. I could feel his cool breath on my neck, feel his nose sliding along my jaw, inhaling. I thought you were desensitized. Just because I'm resisting the wine doesn't mean I can't appreciate the bouquet, he whispered. You have a very floral smell, like lavender or freesia, he noted. It's mouth-watering. Yeah, it's an off day when I don't get somebody telling me how edible I smell. He chuckled and then sighed. I've decided what I want to do, I told him. I want to hear more about you. Ask me anything. I sifted through my questions for the most vital. Why do you do it? I said. I still don't understand how you can work so hard to resist what you are. Please don't misunderstand. Of course I'm glad that you do. I just don't see why you would bother in the first place. He hesitated before answering. That's a good question, and you are not the first one to ask it. The others, the majority of our kind who are quite content with our lot, they too wonder at how we live. But you see, just because we've been dealt a certain hand, it doesn't mean that we can't choose to rise above, to conquer the boundaries of a destiny that none of us wanted, to try to retain whatever essential humanity we can. I lay unmoving, locked in awed silence. Did you fall asleep? He whispered after a few minutes. No. Is that all you were curious about? I rolled my eyes. Not quite. What else do you want to know? Why can you read minds? Why only you? And Alice, seeing the future, why does that happen? I felt him shrug in the darkness. We don't really know. Carlyle has a theory. He believes that we all bring something of our strongest human traits with us into the next life, where they are intensified, like our minds and our senses. He thinks that I must have already been very sensitive to the thoughts of those around me, and that Alice had some precognition wherever she was. What did he bring into the next life, and the others? Carlyle brought his compassion. Esme brought her ability to love passionately. Emmett brought his strength. Rosalie, her tenacity. Or you could call it pig-headedness, he chuckled. Jasper is very interesting. He was quite charismatic in his first life, able to influence those around him to see things his way. Now he is able to manipulate the emotions of those around him, calm down a room of angry people, for example, or excite a lethargic crowd, conversely. It's a very subtle gift. I considered the impossibilities he described, trying to take it in. He waited patiently while I thought. So where did it all start? I mean, Carlyle changed you, and then someone must have changed him, and so on. Well, where did you come from? Evolution? Creation? Couldn't we have evolved in the same way as other species? Predator and prey? Or if you don't believe that all this world could have just happened on its own, which is hard for me to accept myself. Is it so hard to believe that the same force that created the delicate angelfish with the shark, the baby seal and the killer whale, could create both our kinds together? Let me get this straight. I'm the baby seal, right? Right, he laughed, and something touched my hair. His lips? I wanted to turn toward him to see if it was really his lips against my hair. But I had to be good. I didn't want to make this any harder for him than it already was. Are you ready to sleep? He asked, interrupting the short silence. Or do you have any more questions? Only a million or two. We have tomorrow. And the next day. And the next, he reminded me. I smiled, euphoric at the thought. Are you sure you won't vanish in the morning? I wanted this to be certain. You are mythical, after all. I won't leave you. His voice had the seal of a promise in it. One more, then, tonight, and I blushed. The darkness was no help. I'm sure he could feel the sudden warmth under my skin. What is it? No, forget it. I changed my mind. Bella, you can ask me anything. I didn't answer, and he groaned. I keep thinking it will get less frustrating not hearing your thoughts. But it just gets worse and worse. I'm glad you can't read my thoughts. It's bad enough that you eavesdrop on my sleep talking. Please. His voice was so persuasive, so impossible to resist. I shook my head. If you don't tell me, I'll just assume it's something much worse than it is, he threatened darkly. Please. Again, that pleading voice. Well, I began, glad that he couldn't see my face. Yes? You said that Rosalie and Emmett will get married soon. Is that marriage the same as it is for humans? He laughed in earnest now, understanding. Is that what you're getting at? I fidgeted, unable to answer. Yes, I suppose it is much the same, he said. I told you, most of those human desires are there, just hidden behind more powerful desires. Oh, was all I could say. Was there a purpose behind your curiosity? Well, I did wonder about you and me someday. He was instantly serious. I could tell by the sudden stillness of his body. I froze too, reacting automatically. I don't think that would be possible for us. Because it would be too hard for you if I were that close? That's certainly a problem, but that's not what I was thinking of. It's just that you are so soft, so fragile. I have to mind my actions every moment that we're together so that I don't hurt you. I could kill you quite easily, Bella, simply by accident. His voice had become just a soft murmur. He moved his icy palm to rest it against my cheek. If I was too hasty, if for one second I wasn't paying enough attention, I could reach out, meaning to touch your face, and crush your skull by mistake. You don't realize how incredibly breakable you are. I can never, never afford to lose any kind of control when I'm with you. He waited for me to respond, growing anxious when I didn't. Are you scared? He asked. I waited for a minute to answer, so the words would be true. No, I'm fine. He seemed to deliberate for a moment. I'm curious now, though. He said, his voice light again. Have you ever... He trailed off suggestively. Of course not, I flushed. I told you I've never felt like this about anyone before, not even close. I know. It's just that I know other people's thoughts. I know love and lust don't always keep the same company. They do for me. Now, anyway, that they exist for me at all, I sighed. That's nice. We have that one thing in common, at least. He sounded satisfied. Your human instincts, I began. He waited. Well, do you find me attractive in that way at all? He laughed and lightly rumpled my nearly dry hair. I may not be a human, but I am a man, he assured me. I yawned involuntarily. I've answered your questions. Now you should sleep. He insisted. I'm not sure if I can. Do you want me to leave? No, I said too loudly. He laughed, and then began to hum that same unfamiliar lullaby. The voice of an archangel soft in my ear. More tired than I realized, exhausted from the long day of mental and emotional stress like I'd never felt before, I drifted to sleep in his cold arms. Chapter 15. The Cullens. The muted light of yet another cloudy day eventually woke me. I lay with my arm across my eyes, groggy and dazed. Something, a dream trying to be remembered, struggled to break into my consciousness. I moaned and rolled on my side, hoping more sleep would come. And then the previous day flooded back into my awareness. Oh! I sat up so fast it made my head spin. Your hair looks like a haystack, but I like it. His unruffled voice came from the rocking chair in the corner. Edward, you stayed. I rejoiced and thoughtlessly threw myself across the room and into his lap. In the instant that my thoughts caught up with my actions, I froze. Shocked by my own uncontrolled enthusiasm, I stared up at him, afraid that I had crossed the wrong line. but he laughed. "Of course," he answered, startled, but seeming pleased by my reaction. His hands rubbed my back. I laid my head cautiously against his shoulder, breathing in the smell of his skin. I was sure it was a dream. "You're not that creative," he scoffed. "Charlie," I remembered, thoughtlessly jumping up again and heading to the door. "He left an hour ago, after reattaching your battery cables, I might add. I have to admit I was disappointed. Is that really all it would take to stop you, if you were determined to go?" I deliberated where I stood, wanting to return to him badly, but afraid I might have morning breath. "You're not usually this confused in the morning," he noted. He held his arms open for me to return, a nearly irresistible invitation. "I need another human minute," I admitted. "I'll wait." I skipped to the bathroom, my emotions unrecognizable. I didn't know myself, inside or out. The face in the mirror was practically a stranger. Eyes too bright, hectic spots of red across my cheekbones. After I brushed my teeth, I worked to straighten out the tangled chaos that was my hair. I splashed my face with cold water and tried to breathe normally, with no noticeable success. I half ran back to my room. It seemed like a miracle that he was there, his arms still waiting for me. He reached out to me and my heart thumped unsteadily. "Welcome back," he murmured, taking me into his arms. He rocked me for a while in silence, until I noticed that his clothes were changed, his hair smooth. "You left?" I accused, touching the collar of his fresh shirt. "I could hardly leave in the clothes I came in. What would the neighbors think?" I pouted. "You were very deeply asleep. I didn't miss anything." His eyes gleamed. "The talking came earlier." I groaned. "What did you hear?" His gold eyes grew very soft. "You said you loved me." "You knew that already," I reminded him, ducking my head. "It was nice to hear, just the same." I hid my face against his shoulder. "I love you," I whispered. "You are my life now," he answered simply. There was nothing more to say for the moment. He rocked us back and forth as the room grew lighter. "Breakfast time," he said eventually, casually, to prove I'm sure that he remembered all my human frailties. So I clutched my throat with both hands and stared at him with wide eyes. Shock crossed his face. "Kidding," I snickered, "and you said I couldn't act." He frowned in disgust. "That wasn't funny." "It was very funny, and you know it." But I examined his gold eyes carefully to make sure that I was forgiven. Apparently I was. "Shall I rephrase?" he asked. "Breakfast time for the human." "Oh, okay." He threw me over his stone shoulder, gently, but with a swiftness that left me breathless. I protested as he carried me easily down the stairs, but he ignored me. He sat me right side up on a chair. The kitchen was bright, happy, seeming to absorb my mood. "What's for breakfast?" I asked pleasantly. That threw him for a minute. I'm not sure. What would you like?" His marble brow puckered. I grinned, hopping up. "That's all right. I fend for myself pretty well. Watch me hunt." I found a bowl and a box of cereal. I could feel his eyes on me as I poured the milk and grabbed a spoon. I sat my food on the table and then paused. "Can I get you anything?" I asked, not wanting to be rude. He rolled his eyes. "Just eat, Bella." I sat at the table watching him as I took a bite. He was gazing at me, studying my every movement. It made me self-conscious. I cleared my mouth to speak, to distract him. "What's on the agenda for today?" I asked. I watched him frame his answer carefully. "What would you say to meeting my family?" I gulped. "Are you afraid now?" He sounded hopeful. "Yes," I admitted. How can I deny it? He could see my eyes. Don't worry, he smirked. I'll protect you. I'm not afraid of them, I explained. I'm afraid they won't like me. Won't they be, well, surprised that you would bring someone like me home to meet them? Do they know that I know about them? Oh, they already know everything. They'd taken bets yesterday, you know, he smiled, but his voice was harsh. On whether I'd bring you back. Though why anyone would bet against Alice, I can't imagine. At any rate, we don't have secrets in the family. It's not really feasible, what with my mind reading and Alice seeing the future and all that. And Jasper making you feel all warm and fuzzy about spilling your guts, don't forget that. You paid attention, he smiled approvingly. I've been known to do that every now and then, I grimaced. So did Alice see me coming? His reaction was strange. Something like that, he said uncomfortably, turning away so I couldn't see his eyes. I stared at him curiously. Is that any good? He asked, turning back to me abruptly and eyeing my breakfast with a teasing look on his face. Honestly, it doesn't look very appetizing. Well, it's no irritable grizzly, I murmured, ignoring him when he glowered. I was still wondering why he responded that way when I mentioned Alice. I hurried through my cereal, speculating. He stood in the middle of the kitchen, the statue of Adonis again, staring abstractedly out the back windows. Then his eyes were back on me, and he smiled his heartbreaking smile. And you should introduce me to your father, too, I think. He already knows you, I reminded him. As your boyfriend, I mean. I stared at him with suspicion. Why? Isn't that customary? He asked innocently. I don't know, I admitted. My dating history gave me few reference points to work with. Not that any normal rules of dating applied here. It's not necessary, you know. I don't expect you to... I mean, you don't have to pretend for me. His smile was patient. I'm not pretending. I pushed the remains of my cereal around the edges of the bowl, biting my lip. Are you going to tell Charlie I'm your boyfriend or not? He demanded. Is that what you are? I suppressed my internal cringing at the thought of Edward and Charlie and the word boyfriend all in the same room at the same time. It's a loose interpretation of the word boy, I'll admit. I was under the impression that you were something more, actually, I confessed, looking at the table. Well, I don't know if we need to give him all the gory details. He reached across the table to lift my chin with a cold, gentle finger. But he will need some explanation for why I'm around here so much. I don't want Chief Swan getting a restraining order put on me. Will you be? I asked, suddenly anxious. Will you really be here? As long as you want me, he assured me. I'll always want to, I warned him. Forever. He walked slowly around the table, and pausing a few feet away, he reached out to touch his fingertips to my cheek. His expression was unfathomable. Does that make you sad? I asked. He didn't answer. He stared into my eyes for an immeasurable period of time. Are you finished? He finally asked. I jumped up. Yes. Get dressed. I'll wait here. It was hard to decide what to wear. I doubted there were any etiquette books detailing how to dress when your vampire sweetheart takes you home to meet his vampire family. It was a relief to think the word to myself. I knew I shied away from it intentionally. I ended up in my only skirt, long, khaki-colored, still casual. I put on the dark blue blouse he'd once complimented. A quick glance in the mirror told me my hair was entirely impossible, so I pulled it back into a ponytail. Okay, I bounced down the stairs. I'm decent. He was waiting at the foot of the stairs, closer than I'd thought, and I bounded right into him. He steadied me, holding me a careful distance away for a few seconds before suddenly pulling me closer. Wrong again, he murmured in my ear. You are utterly indecent. No one should look so tempting. It's not fair. Tempting how? I asked. I can change. He sighed, shaking his head. You are so absurd. He pressed his cool lips delicately to my forehead, and the room spun. The smell of his breath made it impossible to think. Shall I explain how you are tempting me? He said. It was clearly a rhetorical question. His fingers traced slowly down my spine, his breath coming more quickly against my skin. My hands were limp on his chest and I felt lightheaded again. He tilted his head slowly and touched his cool lips to mine for the second time, very carefully, parting them slightly. And then I collapsed. Bella? His voice was alarmed as he caught me and held me up. You made me faint, I accused him dizzily. What am I going to do with you? He groaned in exasperation. Yesterday I kiss you, and you attack me. Today you pass out on me. I laughed weakly, letting his arms support me while my head spun. So much for being good at everything, he sighed. That's the problem. I was still dizzy. You're too good. Far, far too good. Do you feel sick? He asked. He'd seen me like this before. No, that wasn't the same kind of fainting at all. I don't know what happened. I shook my head apologetically. I think I forgot to breathe. I can't take you anywhere like this. I'm fine, I insisted. Your family's going to think I'm insane anyway. What's the difference? He measured my expression for a moment. I'm very partial to that color with your skin, he offered unexpectedly. I flushed with pleasure and looked away. Look, I'm trying really hard not to think about what I'm about to do, so can we go already? I asked. And you're worried not because you're headed to meet a house full of vampires, but because you think those vampires won't approve of you, correct? That's right, I answered immediately, hiding my surprise at his casual use of the word. He shook his head. You're incredible. I realized as he drove my truck out of the main part of town that I had no idea where he lived. We passed over the bridge at the Kalawa River, the road winding northward, the houses flashing past us growing farther apart, getting bigger. And then we were past the other houses altogether, driving through misty forest. I was trying to decide whether to ask or be patient when he turned abruptly onto an unpaved road. It was unmarked, barely visible among the ferns. The forest encroached on both sides, leaving the road ahead only discernible for a few meters as it twisted, serpent-like, around the ancient trees. And then, after a few miles, there was some thinning of the woods, and we were suddenly in a small meadow, or was it actually a lawn? The gloom of the forest didn't relent, though, for there were six primordial cedars that shaded an entire acre with their vast sweep of branches. The trees held their protecting shadow right up to the walls of the house that rose among them, making obsolete the deep porch that wrapped around the first story. I don't know what I had expected, but it definitely wasn't this. The house was timeless, graceful, and probably 100 years old. It was painted a soft, faded white. 3 stories tall, rectangular, and well-proportioned. The windows and doors were either part of the original structure, a perfect restoration. My truck was the only car in sight. I could hear the river close by, hidden in the obscurity of the forest. Wow. You like it? He smiled. It has a certain charm. He pulled the end of my ponytail and chuckled. Ready? He asked, opening my door. Not even a little bit. Let's go. I tried to laugh, but it seemed to get stuck in my throat. I smoothed my hair nervously. You look lovely. He took my hand easily without thinking about it. We walked through the deep shade up to the porch. I knew he could feel my tension. His thumb rubbed soothing circles into the back of my hand. He opened the door for me. The inside was even more surprising, less predictable than the exterior. It was very bright, very open, and very large. This must have originally been several rooms, but the walls had been removed from most of the first floor to create one wide space. The back south-facing wall had been entirely replaced with glass, and beyond the shade of the cedars, the lawn stretched bare to the wide river. A massive curving staircase dominated the west side of the room. The walls, the high-beam ceiling, the wooden floors, and the thick carpets were all varying shades of white. Waiting to greet us, standing just to the left of the door, on a raised portion of the floor by a spectacular grand piano, were Edward's parents. I'd seen Dr. Cullen before, of course, yet I couldn't help but be struck again by his youth, his outrageous perfection. At his side was Esme, I assumed, the only one of the family I'd never seen before. She had the same pale, beautiful features as the rest of them. Something about her heart-shaped face, her billows of soft, caramel-colored hair, reminded me of the ingenues of the silent movie era. She was small, slender, yet less angular, more rounded than the others. They were both dressed casually in light colors that matched the inside of the house. They smiled in welcome, but made no move to approach us. Trying not to frighten me, I guessed. "Carlyle? Esme?" Edward's voice broke the short silence. "This is Bella." "You're very welcome, Bella." Carlyle's step was measured, careful, as he approached me. He raised his hand tentatively, and I stepped forward to shake hands with him. "It's nice to see you again, Dr. Cullen." "Please, call me Carlyle." "Carlyle." I grinned at him, my sudden confidence surprising me. I could feel Edward's relief at my side. Esme smiled and stepped forward as well, reaching for my hand. Her cold, stone grasp was just as I expected. "It's very nice to know you," she said sincerely. "Thank you. I'm glad to meet you, too." And I was. It was like meeting a fairy tale, Snow White in the flesh. "Where are Alice and Jasper?" Edward asked, but no one answered, as they had just appeared at the top of the wide staircase. "Hey, Edward!" Alice called enthusiastically. She ran down the stairs, a streak of black hair and white skin, coming to a sudden and graceful stop in front of me. Carlyle and Esme shot warning glances at her, but I liked it. It was natural, for her anyway. "Hi, Bella," Alice said, and she bounced forward to kiss my cheek. If Carlyle and Esme had looked cautious before, they now looked staggered. There was shock in my eyes, too, but I was also very pleased that she seemed to approve of me so entirely. I was startled to feel Edward stiffen at my side. I glanced at his face, but his expression was unreadable. "You do smell nice. I never noticed before," she commented, to my extreme embarrassment. No one else seemed to know quite what to say. And then Jasper was there, tall and leonine. A feeling of ease spread through me, and I was suddenly comfortable despite where I was. Edward stared at Jasper, raising one eyebrow, and I remembered what Jasper could do. "Hello, Bella," Jasper said. He kept his distance, not offering to shake my hand. But it was impossible to feel awkward near him. "Hello, Jasper." I smiled at him shyly, and then at the others. "It's nice to meet you all. You have a very beautiful home," I added conventionally. "Thank you," Esme said. "We're so glad that you came." She spoke with feeling, and I realized that she thought I was brave. I also realized that Rosalie and Emmett were nowhere to be seen, and I remembered Edward's too innocent denial when I'd asked him if the others didn't like me. Carlyle's expression distracted me from this train of thought. He was gazing meaningfully at Edward with an intense expression. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Edward nod once. I looked away, trying to be polite. My eyes wandered again to the beautiful instrument on the platform by the door. I suddenly remembered my childhood fantasy that, should I ever win a lottery, I would buy a grand piano for my mother. She wasn't really good. She only played for herself on our second-hand upright, but I loved to watch her play. She was happy, absorbed. She seemed like a new, mysterious being to me then, someone outside the mom persona I took for granted. She'd put me through lessons, of course, but like most kids, I whined until she let me quit. Esme noticed my preoccupation. "Do you play?" she asked, inclining her head toward the piano. I shook my head. "Not at all. But it's so beautiful. Is it yours?" "No," she laughed. "Edward didn't tell you he was musical." "No." I glared at his suddenly innocent expression with narrowed eyes. "I should have known, I guess." Esme raised her delicate eyebrows in confusion. "Edward can do everything, right?" I explained. Jasper snickered, and Esme gave Edward a reproving look. "I hope you haven't been showing off. It's rude," she scolded. "Just a bit," he laughed freely. Her face softened at the sound, and they shared a brief look that I didn't understand, though Esme's face seemed almost smug. "He's been too modest, actually," I corrected. "Well, play for her," Esme encouraged. "You just said showing off was rude," he objected. "There are exceptions to every rule," she replied. "I'd like to hear you play," I volunteered. "It's settled then." Esme pushed him toward the piano. He pulled me along, sitting me on the bench beside him. He gave me a long, exasperated look before he turned to the keys. And then his fingers flowed swiftly across the ivory, and the room was filled with a composition so complex, so luxuriant, it was impossible to believe only one set of hands played. I felt my chin drop, my mouth open in astonishment, and heard low chuckles behind me at my reaction. Edward looked at me casually, the music still surging around us without a break, and winked. "Do you like it?" "You wrote this?" I gasped, understanding. He nodded. "It's Esme's favorite." I closed my eyes, shaking my head. "What's wrong?" "I'm feeling extremely insignificant." The music slowed, transforming into something softer. And to my surprise, I detected the melody of his lullaby weaving through the profusion of notes. "You inspired this one," he said softly. The music grew unbearably sweet. I couldn't speak. "They like you, you know," he said conversationally. "Esme especially." I glanced behind me, but the huge room was empty now. "Where did they go?" "Very subtly giving us some privacy, I suppose." I sighed. "They like me, but Rosalie and Emmett..." I trailed off, not sure how to express my doubts. He frowned. "Don't worry about Rosalie," he said, his eyes wide and persuasive. "She'll come around." I pursed my lips skeptically. "Emmett?" "Well, he thinks I'm a lunatic, it's true, but he doesn't have a problem with you. He's trying to reason with Rosalie." "What is it that upsets her?" I wasn't sure if I wanted to know the answer. He sighed deeply. "Rosalie struggles the most with what we are. It's hard for her to have someone on the outside know the truth. And she's a little jealous." "Rosalie is jealous of me?" I asked incredulously. I tried to imagine a universe in which someone as breathtaking as Rosalie would have any possible reason to feel jealous of someone like me. "You're human," he shrugged. "She wishes that she were too." "Oh," I muttered, still stunned. "Even Jasper, though..." "That's really my fault," he said. "I told you he was the most recent to try our way of life. I warned him to keep his distance." I thought about the reason for that and shuddered. "Esme and Carlyle," I continued quickly to keep him from noticing, "are happy to see me happy. Actually, Esme wouldn't care if you had a third eye and webbed feet. All this time she's been worried about me, afraid that there was something missing from my essential makeup, that I was too young when Carlyle changed me. She's ecstatic. Every time I touch you, she just about chokes with satisfaction. Alice seems very enthusiastic." "Alice has her own way of looking at things," he said through tight lips. "And you're not going to explain that, are you?" A moment of wordless communication passed between us. He realized that he knew he was keeping something from me, I realized that he wasn't going to give anything away. Not now. So what was Carlyle telling you before? His eyebrows pulled together. You noticed that, did you? I shrugged. Of course. He looked at me thoughtfully for a few seconds before answering. He wanted to tell me some news. He didn't know if it was something I would share with you. Will you? I have to, because I'm going to be a little overbearingly protective over the next few days, or weeks. And I wouldn't want you to think I'm naturally a tyrant. What's wrong? Nothing's wrong, exactly. Alice just sees some visitors coming soon. They know we're here, and they're curious. Visitors? Yes, well, they aren't like us, of course, in their hunting habits, I mean. They probably won't come into town at all, but I'm certainly not going to let you out of my sight till they're gone. I shivered. Finally, a rational response, he murmured. I was beginning to think you had no sense of self-preservation at all. I let that one pass, looking away, my eyes wandering again around the spacious room. He followed my gaze. Not what you expected, is it? He asked, his voice smug. No, I admitted. No coffins, no piled skulls in the corners. I don't even think we have cobwebs. What a disappointment this must be for you, he continued slyly. I ignored his teasing. It's so light, so open. He was more serious when he answered. It's the one place we never have to hide. The song he was still playing, my song, drifted to an end, the final chord shifting to a more melancholy key. The last note hovered poignantly in the silence. Thank you, I murmured. I realized there were tears in my eyes. I dabbed at them, embarrassed. He touched the corner of my eye, trapping one I missed. He lifted his finger, examining the drop of moisture, broodingly. Then, so quickly I couldn't be positive that he really did, he put his finger to his mouth to taste it. I looked at him questioningly, and he gazed back for a long moment before he finally smiled. Do you want to see the rest of the house? No coffins, I verified, the sarcasm in my voice not entirely masking the slight but genuine anxiety I felt. He laughed, taking my hand, leading me away from the piano. No coffins, he promised. We walked up the massive staircase, my hand trailing along the satin-smooth rail. The long hall at the top of the stairs was paneled with a honey-colored wood, the same as the floorboards. Rosalie and Emmett's room, Carlyle's office, Alice's room, he gestured as he led me past the doors. He would have continued, but I stopped dead at the end of the hall, staring incredulously at the ornament hanging on the wall above my head. Edward chuckled at my bewildered expression. You can laugh, he said. It is sort of ironic. I didn't laugh. My hand raised automatically, one finger extended as if to touch the large wooden cross, its dark patina contrasting with the lighter tone of the wall. I didn't touch it, though I was curious if the aged wood would feel as silky as it looked. It must be very old, I gasped. He shrugged. Early 1630s, more or less. I looked away from the cross to stare at him. Why do you keep this here? I wondered. Nostalgia. It belonged to Carlyle's father. He collected antiques? I suggested doubtfully. No, he carved this himself. It hung on the wall above the pulpit in the vicarage where he preached. I wasn't sure if my face betrayed my shock, but I returned to gazing at the simple ancient cross just in case. I quickly did the mental math. The cross was over 370 years old. The silence stretched on as I struggled to wrap my mind around the concept of so many years. Are you all right? He sounded worried. How old is Carlyle? I asked quietly, ignoring his question, still staring up. He just celebrated his 362nd birthday, Edward said. I looked back at him, a million questions in my eyes. He watched me carefully as he spoke. Carlyle was born in London in the 1640s, he believes. Time wasn't marked as accurately then for the common people anyway. It was just before Cromwell's rule, though. I kept my face composed, aware of his scrutiny as I listened. It was easier if I didn't try to believe. He was the only son of an Anglican pastor. His mother died giving birth to him. His father was an intolerant man. As the Protestants came into power, he was enthusiastic in his persecution of Roman Catholics and other religions. He also believed very strongly in the reality of evil. He led hunts for witches, werewolves, and vampires. I grew very still at the word. I'm sure he noticed, but he went on without pausing. They burned a lot of innocent people. Of course, the real creatures that he sought were not so easy to catch. When the pastor grew old, he placed his obedient son in charge of the raids. At first, Carlyle was a disappointment. He was not quick to accuse, to see demons where they did not exist. But he was persistent and more clever than his father. He actually discovered a coven of true vampires that lived hidden in the sewers of the city, only coming out by night to hunt. In those days, when monsters were not just myths and legends, that was the way many lived. The people gathered their pitchforks and torches, of course, his brief laugh was darker now, and waited where Carlyle had seen the monsters exit into the street. Eventually, one emerged. His voice was very quiet. I strained to catch the words. He must have been ancient and weak with hunger. Carlyle heard him call out in Latin to the others when he caught the scent of the mob. He ran through the streets, and Carlyle, he was 23 and very fast, was in the lead of the pursuit. The creature could have easily outrun them, but Carlyle thinks he was too hungry, so he turned and attacked. He fell on Carlyle first, but the others were close behind, and he turned to defend himself. He killed two men and made off with a third, leaving Carlyle bleeding in the street. He paused. I could sense he was editing something, keeping something from me. Carlyle knew what his father would do. The bodies would be burned. Anything infected by the monster must be destroyed. Carlyle acted instinctively to save his own life. He crawled away from the alley while the mob followed the fiend and his victim. He hid in a cellar, buried himself in rotting potatoes for 3 days. It's a miracle he was able to keep silent, to stay undiscovered. It was over then, and he realized what he had become. I'm not sure what my face was revealing, but he suddenly broke off. "How are you feeling?" he asked. "I'm fine," I assured him. And though I bit my lip in hesitation, he must have seen the curiosity burning in my eyes. He smiled. "I expect you have a few more questions for me?" "A few." His smile widened over his brilliant teeth. He started back down the hall, pulling me along by the hand. "Come on, then," he encouraged. "I'll show you." Chapter 16. Carlyle. He led me back to the room that he'd pointed out as Carlyle's office. He paused outside the door for an instant. "Come in," Carlyle's voice invited. Edward opened the door to a high-ceilinged room with tall, west-facing windows. The walls were paneled again, in a darker wood, where they were visible. Most of the wall space was taken up by towering bookshelves that reached high above my head and held more books than I'd ever seen outside a library. Carlyle sat behind a huge mahogany desk in a leather chair. He was just placing a bookmark in the pages of the thick volume he held. The room was how I'd always imagined a college dean's would look,